Welcome back to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Still in studio with me is Nate. We're going to talk now about a fairly light story, interesting one featured by the New York Times regarding Thai food and the Thai government's official position on Thai food around the world. So, you know, something that Nate had talked about on some of our like World Cup segments and stuff was about how countries like, you know, Qatar try to promote soft power, you know, positive images of themselves around the world so that it will kind of offset some of the other stuff. Now, Thailand's government, as we've talked about previously on the show, had kind of some chaos going on, instability for quite a few years now, and then ultimately earlier this year, there was a military coup there. But one policy seems to have carried through from the previous government before the coup and the government after the coup, coming from the highest levels of government, this very bizarre version of soft power. So Nate, why don't you walk us through kind of the basics of what soft power usually consists of and what it seems to be in this application.
Yeah, well, I mean, soft power is just sort of a, not even an academic term, but just sort of this like pop internationalism to use to describe the influence a country's culture can have on a global context. So if we think about, okay, the U.S. is known all around the world, but the U.S. culture is also known all around the world. So, you know, you have something like The Simpsons, which is recognized pretty much in every country, I would say, over the just because of how long it's been running over the past like 30 years or so. And just like there are various, you know, aspects of American, you know, television and movie influence all around the world. So that's just one example. And there's influence of food and, you know, all sorts of things like that. And in the example we're talking about here, it's the influence of foreign foods, you know, maybe on the U.S. or on other countries, specifically Thai food. Now, you know, as we've seen over the past couple of decades, I feel like Thai food is becoming more and more popular in the U.S. It's now just becoming sort of like a standard. Okay, what do you want? Let's get some Thai. Let's get some pizza. Let's get some, you know, Chinese, Japanese. It's, you know, becoming one of the standard options. Whenever that happens, you know, you sort of have like a proliferation and a change of the cuisine in order to conform with sort of American standards. So, you know, you see in Chinese cuisine, there's more like deep fried stuff. So
right,
it's hard to sell food in the U.S. without defrying it at least a little bit.
And Chinese food, of course, you know, a lot of that was basically Chinese-American food right from the beginning, like those populations in the, you know, late 19th century in the San Francisco area. So they came up with, from the beginning, sort of an Americanized version of Chinese food. But apparently that hasn't gone over too well, that transformation of Thai food with certain high-level Thai
foods. Right, and, you know, going to this New York Times article, the Prime Minister of Thailand, Yingluck Sinatra, apparently she, you know, would go around the world and she would sample Thai food at various restaurants, and she just thought it was terrible. Like, she just thought it was bland, you know, not necessarily spicy, and so she's since been thrown out of office by a military coup, because that's just what happens in Thailand usually. But apparently a program that she started will be allowed to continue, and that is the program where a robot or a sensory machine will basically sample different types of Thai food and basically just rates it against a standard which is deemed to be the authentic version. So it's sampling different types of smells and tastes and different types of ingredients and just matching it up against some of these standard recipes.
Yeah, at its sort of core version, the way that the machine theoretically works is that you put in a sample, say what kind of food you were going for, what kind of meal you were attempting to prepare. It does a quick chemical analysis, figures out the composition of the food in terms of its ingredients, which it has a whole database to figure out, you know, oh, this chemical signature matches this ingredient and whatever. And then it says, you know, checks your ratios, and then it matches that against this record that they've uploaded from this study that they did, not with food critics or anything, but just ordinary Thai people. They got like 120 people or something like that to rate various versions of typical meals and then say, okay, this is the quote unquote authentically Thai version that we'll use for our database. And then, you know, it's going to compare the meal that your sample has been put in against this database.
Yeah, and they're actually, they've even created an app for this. It's called the Thai Delicious app. And this is Thai Delicious Committee that's, of course, putting out all these guidelines. And that basically the app has about 10 recipes. Only 3 have been published so far, but should have 10 recipes, and then you can compare them and, you know, put them in the machine and then just use that as a basis of comparison. The only problem is the machine costs about $18,000, and it's going to be sold to Thai embassies and countries with many Thai restaurants. So one could be coming to the U.S. at some point pretty soon.
And it rates on a scale of like 0 to 100 about how similar your meal is to like an authentic recipe.
Yeah. And, okay. And here's the problem with this. And this, you know, I'm just getting to this part of the article now, but you know, this sort of was kind of glaring to me immediately on reading this. And that's, you know, just because some sort of food has like the right mix maybe of spices, it doesn't necessarily tell you how they're blended or, you know, whether they were put in the wrong order, because that can sometimes have a disastrous impact on a dish, just like putting in the ingredients wrong. So you would wonder whether it would really be able to pick up those sort of subtleties. And there's also an example in the article about just basically a taste test where, you know, a bunch of students and, you know, roadside chefs and just like people that eat this sort of food all the time without even thinking about it. And they were served 10 different soups and they rated one, and the winning one was only rated 78, which is lower than standard. So, I mean, that sort of leads to some questions, and they sort of blamed it on foreigners. Because foreigners, they eat it, then they prepare it here, and then they're like, okay, well, maybe 70 is good enough for the foreigners, I'm not sure. And then, you know, there's just, the article ends quoting this one guy who's just like a food stall owner, just like chilling on the street in Thailand. He said he's been cooking since 10, and the slightest variation during the preparation of his dishes, as I said, including changing the order, the ingredients are mixed, or the brand of fish sauce, could be different ingredients, affects the taste. I use my tongue to test if it's delicious or not, he said. I think the government should consider using a human to gauge authenticity. So, seems like we're getting a little bit of a pushback from just the man on the street there. I mean, I think this is kind of a cool idea, just in terms of, like, you know, bringing the robots onto the sensory plane. You know, just, like, soon they'll be able to touch and feel and love just like us. But, you know, until then, I'm not entirely sure if this is perhaps the best. I mean, it'd be right. Kind of cool if you could, like, go into a Thai restaurant and all their things were rated about how, like, standard they are, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, and to your point about preparation, I mean, this goes to this issue of, this is not the first country that has tried to say, you know, hey, we want to have more influence over how it's prepared or how it's made or what's in the dish, that kind of thing, how authentic it is in other parts of the world. Because they're not obviously really trying to change it at home. It's all about the overseas sort of projection of this food culture. France is probably the one that's most prominent for this activity. In addition to, you know, the usual things that we hear about, like them getting into legal disputes over whether you can call something champagne if it's not from Champagne. Like, well, those are,
they get about into legal disputes over their words too, whether their words are too, you know, Americanized or whatever.
Right. So, you know, that litigation stuff aside, you know, that's a whole separate issue. But one of the things that they did was they, for a long time, were the only food listed on the UNESCO World Heritage list of it. You know, this is a World Heritage thing or whatever. Like, a lot of it's, you know, monuments and stuff like that, or old archaeological sites and that type of thing. But in France's case, they had this sort of, it's the high culture French cuisine, the really like upper level. And the way that they did this was, instead of having, like, you know, Thailand's approach here is to have like a robot that's trying to match to some database or whatever.
The French are too big to building robots.
Exactly. The French still have a very artisanal approach to a lot of these things. So what they did was they set up these academies all over the world that would teach people, you know, the quote-unquote authentic way to prepare all of these dishes, and you couldn't get your restaurant certified as this authentic type of food, you know, unless it was, you know, that you were a chef trained by one of their academies, and they have these all over the place. Now, late last year, I think it was in December, actually, Japan finally got quote-unquote Japanese cuisine, traditional Japanese cuisine, added to the UNESCO list, so there are now two food categories that are on that list. And, you know, Japan was actually, their government there was pointing out that, in fact, the food had already started to transform in the country. I mean, food always is changing constantly, but it had started to get a lot of more westernized elements even before they submitted this for approval. So what they basically did was they had to come up with a quote-unquote authentic version that was more authentic than what you would actually be getting in Japan for food. And so it's probably like maybe 50, 60, 70 years ago version of what Japanese food was, and you say this is the official version, and then I guess they're probably going to start promoting official Japanese preparation of cuisine, but I don't think that's going to work out that well because we, like you said, we already have all these Japanese restaurants doing the American version.
In fact, actually, I was reading a book about just like this Japanese family during World War II, and it seems like that wouldn't be a problem. There would be at least a little bit of tempura around, so that's good. Just wondering if we can get a pizza and burgers on the UNESCO World Heritage List. Is that a possibility, Bill?
Yeah, get a Philadelphia cheesesteak on the UNESCO World Heritage.
I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with that either. If we're going to talk about soft power, I mean, pizza and burgers right there, that's a lot of soft power. It'll make you soft and not that powerful, but okay. Just cut that part out.
On an extra, extra serious note, I think that we can all agree universally that the main problem with this proposal from the Thai government is that they're definitely creating robots that are going to end up killing us all because we're insufficiently spicy. I think that's the primary risk that we're looking at here. And if you're looking at a Rise of the Machines scenario, let's just remember that Thailand was one of the few countries that was never colonized by Western governments. So, you know, if anyone's going to design a robot that can destroy humanity, despite the best efforts of the rest of the world, I think Thailand's food robots are going to do it.
What if they just design a robot that, like, squirts sriracha in your eyes, and they just, like, everyone just, like, eyes are burned off, so they basically just can't stop the rise of the machines?
Yeah, I think it's game over at that point. So, anyway, all right. Well, Nate, thank you so much for joining me here to talk about all these issues today on Arsenal for Democracy.
Thanks, Bill.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening to Arsenal for Democracy. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Wednesdays. You can also hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern. Special thanks to my voiceover man, Justin. You can follow his work at the Digitized Ramblings of an 8-Bit Animal from 8BitAnimal.com. You can get additional commentary at ArsenalForDemocracy.com daily, as well as links to articles discussed today. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message. Good night.